I'm Jim O'Neill, a developer evangelist in the Northeast District, and this is the second of three screencasts devoted to talking about what Windows 7 has to offer from a developer's perspective. In this session, we'll take a look at how some of the features of Windows 7 can help make you more productive as both a consumer and a developer. Let's start with monitor support. For those of you using multi-monitors, you'll be happy to know that Remote Desktop now explicitly supports this setup, and the upcoming release of Visual Studio 2010 is also promising better support for multi-monitor configurations. Built into the new window manager, though, are three features known as Snap, Shake, and Peek, which will naturally work with your existing applications. Let's take a look. Here I've got a fairly cluttered desktop with a bunch of overlapping windows, and what I'd like to do is quickly get rid of all the distractions so I can focus on the Word document buried here. So I grab the title bar and give it a little shake, and all the other windows are minimized. Give it another little shake, and they all come back. That's Windows Shake. One of the things I do a lot in my day-to-day activities is copy files from backup, from internal share drives, and so on. With Windows Snap, it makes this, well, a snap. The Windows E key can bring up a new Explorer window. Now if I press the Windows key and the left arrow, I can dock that window to the left of my screen. Repeat the process with the new Explorer window and Windows Right, and I now have a side-by-side arrangement to facilitate my task. If I repeatedly press Windows Right, for instance, I'll see the window walk across my monitor. And by adding the Shift key into my sequence, I can shift from monitor to monitor more quickly. I can also drag windows right or left to snap them, and I can drag the window to the top to maximize it. Likewise, if I want my window to resize so it uses the full vertical space of my monitor, I can do that by grabbing the bottom of the window and dragging it down to the monitor's edge. Last is Windows Peek. This feature manifests itself a couple of ways. If I drag my mouse to the right end of the taskbar, you'll see that all my windows go transparent, giving me a view of my desktop, but still retaining the outline of the windows. If I use the Alt-Tab mechanism, I get the familiar previews, but only the selected window will show. The taskbar is another way to engage the Peek feature. I have multiple pages open in IE here. If I hover over the taskbar icon, I get preview images, and if I hover over a preview, that particular window comes to the foreground, and the others are rendered with the glass effect. Next up is UAC, or User Account Control, what I refer to as the whipping boy of Vista. UAC was a huge headache for many, especially in the early days of Vista. You may have the impression that everyone has this turned off, but that's far from the case. Based on telemetry data, Microsoft has found that only about 12% do have it disengaged, and those using it are seeing just a fraction of the prompts they used to. As I mentioned in the first screencast of this series, much of this is due to the fact that our applications have matured and are much better behaved in terms of using APIs and requesting operations that require administrative access. Windows 7, though, has made some changes and offers a bit more flexibility over the binary switch that Vista included. The default with Windows 7 is a little relaxed, so that you can make changes to system options like the time zone without being prompted for administrative access. Of course, you can opt individually, or your IT department can enforce a group policy to provide the tighter control that Vista offers. One of the most obvious changes in Windows 7 is the taskbar, sometimes called the superbar. This new presentation here is an evolution of navigation schemes, with the goal of making navigation more predictable. One major theme of the new taskbar is combining the concept of launching applications, namely the quick launch portion of the taskbar on the left in Vista, and switching applications, for which you'd use the icons corresponding to opened windows in the center of the taskbar. In Windows 7, quick launch is deprecated, although you can restore it if you'd like. The status area is cleaned up a bit as well, and icons are by default grouped in a pop-up window so as not to completely eat up taskbar real estate. Let's take a look at some of the taskbar features now. You note that the taskbar is actually a little bit bigger, and that's modifiable, but incorporates the glass look to blend in and not seem as imposing. As I hover over each item in the taskbar, I get previews of the open windows to allow switching. Notice too the color gradient that waves over the icon depends on the icon itself. Windows is using the predominant color of the icon to provide a cooler visual experience and to help your icon and application really pop. The previews that you see here are thumbnails of open windows in the given application. By default, any top-level windows that your application surfaces will be presented, and I can click on the thumbnail to switch to that window. With IE here, there's actually an enhancement, and each tab of IE has its own preview. That's because IE has exercised a bit of the new Windows 7 API to expose child windows on the thumbnail, something you can do too if you like. By default, the preview here is just a bitmapped image, but take a look at Windows Media Player. Its preview provides a live view of the recording, and even a few VCR controls to control the video. Options also exposed by the Windows 7 API. Jump lists are another significant feature of the taskbar. A jump list, accessible via a right mouse click, or by a left click and a drag up gesture, is like an application-specific startup menu. By default, all applications will have the bottom three options you see here. Microsoft Word also exposes a list of most recently used documents that you can select and immediately launch into Word. IE exposes a list of most frequently used documents and also adds in a few custom tasks to launch in private browsing or a new tab. You'll be able to customize the actions of your application's taskbar as well. While we're here, let's move directly into libraries. You can see from the Explorer window that Windows 7 gives you several libraries out of the box. A library can be thought of as a view of physical folders. If you look at my Pictures library, you can see that there's a link at the top indicating three locations. These are the folders that the library provides a view into. The library itself is not a folder, and what you see in the library are not shortcuts or file copies. Rather, the library is aggregating contents of the member folders and showing them in one view. One of the folders is designated as the default save location. So if you drag a new file into a library or save one via a file dialog in an application, that's where it will be physically stored. Likewise, if you navigate to a library and delete a file from it, it will be deleted from the physical folder where it's stored. For my Pictures library, I added a new folder where I've stored images from a trip to Italy, so you can add whatever folders you want, whether they be local or external. The library also enables a few view options, so I can look at my pictures by several criteria, such as the month that I took them, or their rating. I also get a really neat preview on the right, although that works for a lot of file types, like Word and Excel, and isn't library specific. With the Explorer window open, notice I have an option under Favorites called Flickr Search. Let's see what that does for us. When I select it, I can type a search term in the box at the top, and what I'll get back is a list of photos and information from Flickr right in Explorer. I can even drag and drop these images into a Word or PowerPoint document if I want. What you're seeing here is the new feature called Federated Search. Federated Search leverages the Open Search standard, which prescribes that a provider encapsulate search APIs in a small XML document and return the results in RSS or ATOM format. Windows 7 interprets any file with the OSDX extension as such a file and offers extensions to the open format to better integrate results with the display you see in Explorer. For example, the Flickr Search OSDX file looks something like this. You can see from the outline section exactly the URL by which the request is sent. The search terms placeholder included in the curly braces will be populated with the search criteria supplied in the Explorer window. To get the Flickr Search capability, I installed the OSDX file from Longzhen's I Started Something site. When you download or launch an OSDX file, Windows recognizes your intention and installs it as a search provider. When I selected the provider in Explorer and entered my search terms, it created the requisite HTTP request and submitted that URL to the Flickr site. Then Explorer just waited for the results to be returned and formatted the resulting XML stream. If you have a search provider that doesn't return results in RSS or ATOM format, or you want to aggregate results from a variety of providers, you can proxy out the calls and massage the results within your own custom implementation. Windows 7 adds native BHD support as well, so if you have a bootable image, say a Vista or XP, you can attach those as external drives to your Windows 7 box and even boot from them. Device Stage is a framework that hardware vendors can tap into, providing a unified experience to the user. In the past, for instance, you'd install a printer and get a bunch of separate utilities for cleaning the print heads, configuring the printer, even ordering toner and paper. With Device Stage, everything is conveniently aggregated in one place and even comes with an accurate picture of the device. If you're working with tablet machines, there's been some updates to the input devices there as well. The tablet input panel will now automatically convert as you write, based on time or distance between strokes, and you can insert new characters into existing words as well. The math input panel is a nifty utility for jotting down equations and then copying them into Word or PowerPoint documents for more formal delivery of your latest physics discovery. The on-screen keyboard's been revamped too and is multi-touch aware, so you can actually hit the shift key and a letter at the same time. Under the covers, there's increased support for text harvesting, meaning that Windows will learn from your word usage patterns and offer increasingly more germane correction suggestions. There's also support for custom dictionaries, which is a boon for vertical industries like pharmaceuticals. As you install more and more applications on your machine, invariably you find it takes longer to start. Some of the fault here is on services that various applications install, but that might not be absolutely necessary. MP3 devices, for instance, might start a service to poll for your device in order to install updates or present the latest music catalog from a website. You really don't need or want that service running all the time, and that's where trigger start services come in. You can tie a service startup to a specific operating system event or a custom event if you desire, so then services start only when appropriate, when you plug in the USB connection to your MP3, or when you join the network, and so on. For those of us that work at home, there's a great feature in Windows 7 called Direct Access. For me at least, getting an email from work with a link that then requires I log into VPN becomes more and more of an annoyance as time goes on. With Direct Access, you can have an always-on, bidirectional connection to the corporate network. It requires Windows 2008 servers on the other end and leverages IPv6 technology. What's nice, though, is that sites outside of your corporate network are still reachable directly. You don't have to tunnel through the corporate network just to get back out to the World Wide Web. Well, unless your IT administrator wants you to. Also in that work-at-home theme is the support for home groups. A home group is a network on Windows 7 machines that is almost self-starting. You would typically set up a home group on your main machine in the home, at which time you'll get a password. Other Windows 7 machines in the vicinity will detect the home group and can join as long as the user provides the password. Machines on a home group can then transparently share directories, files, and even printers. You can even join a home group with a domain-joined computer, the laptop you brought home from work, for example, and take advantages of the resources on the other machines. However, no one within that home group will be able to access your machine, which of course makes a lot of sense from a security and intellectual property perspective. Facilitating file sharing at the office is a feature called branch cache. Branch refers to branch offices, and the idea here is that it's silly for 10 users at an office to each download a large document from corporate headquarters. Instead, let one user do it and cache that document locally, either on a dedicated server for larger offices or on a peer-to-peer basis for smaller offices. When a second user tries to access a document, there's first a metadata request to the source to ensure the local copy is unchanged from the original. If the cached file is indeed in its pristine state, it's served from the local cache, otherwise the entire file is retrieved from the corporate location and replaces the version in the branch cache. And with that, I've covered the major facets of Windows 7 that appeal to the productivity side of our developer personas, much of which also appeals to any consumer of Windows 7. Be sure to catch my other two screencasts on Windows 7 for developers covering application compatibility and how to leverage the new APIs and features of Windows 7 in your own applications. Thanks for your time and have a great rest of your day.